The Gospel of John, chapter 3, we're picking up in our study at verse 22. Gospel of John, chapter 3, at verse 22. I'm reading from the New King James Version. After these things, Jesus and his disciples came into the land of Judea, and there he remained with them and baptized. Now John also was baptizing in Enon near Salem, because there was much water there, and they came and were baptized. This section of text, down through verse 36, is a very interesting section of text. I was very disappointed in commentators that I read in regard to several of the things that are mentioned in it. I think as we study through it, though, we'll see that it has a very close connection to that which we've already studied, even from the very beginning of the book. And I believe it is very closely connected to that which we have seen in chapter 3 already. We begin in verse 22, after these things, of course, after these things has reference to those things that were just mentioned in the immediate context, especially in regard to Nicodemus coming to Jesus by night. So it was after these things, Jesus and disciples came into the land of Judea, the text says. The word land there could perhaps have been more better translated region of Judea, because remember, he is in Judea. He's already in Judea in the context. He's in Jerusalem, in and around Jerusalem somewhere at the time that he speaks to Nicodemus. But he says that he came into the land of Judea. Most newer versions say that he came into the Judean countryside. So he leaves out of the city of Jerusalem and he goes into the countryside of the Roman province of Judea somewhere. And there he remained with them and baptized. Many people take the them in the context, of course, that would be the disciples, because that seems to be the nearest antecedent of that pronoun. But I want to suggest to you that it's not the disciples who are under consideration there. It's those who inhabit the region of Judea, those who are participating in the baptism that's going on. I know that to be the case because that's the way we have to understand the pronoun in the very next verse. Note verse 23. Now John also was baptizing in Enon near Salem because there was much water there. And they came and were baptized. If we take the them in verse 22 to be the disciples of Jesus Christ, then the they in verse 23, the nearest pronoun would be them in verse 22, which refers to the disciples. So you see, the they came and were baptized in verse 23 refers to those who inhabit that city or that town of Enon, located near the town or village of Salem. So it's important for us to understand who those pronouns have reference to in this context, because it is certainly be important later on, but clearly for our understanding of the text. But in verse 22 again, he remained with them and baptized. Now we'll learn in chapter 4, if you'll note the beginning of chapter 4, verse 1 and 2, therefore when the Lord knew that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus had baptized more disciples than John, though Jesus himself did not baptize, but his disciples. He left Judea and departed again to Galilee. So it's not Jesus who's doing the baptizing. Now John the Apostle makes sure we understand later on that it is his disciples who are doing the baptizing. In verse 23, John 3, now John, this would be John the Baptizer, also was baptizing in Enon near Salem. Now these two locations, of course, are not known to us today. There's been 4, 5, even 6 different locations given for these particular places, but actually we really do not know where they were located, other than perhaps on the western side of the Jordan River. I say that because of what he said in verse 26, they came to John and said to him, Rabbi, he who was with you beyond the Jordan. Beyond the Jordan means on the other side of the Jordan, on the eastern side of the Jordan River. So these places of Enon and Salem are on the western side of the Jordan River somewhere. They're located there somewhere, perhaps in Judea. Some say even close to the Roman province of Samaria. Edon, of course, has reference to the name itself. It means a place of many springs. That means there's a great deal of water there. Salem comes from that Old Testament Shalom, meaning peace. And again, we simply do not know where these places are located, but there was much water there, which indicates to us that that the baptizing that was being done by both Jesus, his disciples, and John the Baptizer was an immersion in water. It wasn't a sprinkling or a pouring. If it was a sprinkling or a pouring, then there would have been no need for much water. But the text indicates that there was much water there. Much water needed for immersing people. And when we go back to the word baptized, I think we all understand that it is immersion and not sprinkling or pouring. But this is a good text to indicate that it is not sprinkling or pouring if you're talking to someone about the mode of baptism, because there has to be much water, enough to immerse a person in. Verse 24, John 3. For John had not yet been thrown into prison. Now, why would John the Apostle add that? Well, perhaps if other accounts or the information regarding John the Baptizer was well known by people of this day who were reading this account, John is simply trying to put things in perspective for them to understand that he had not yet been put in prison. It was still during the time of his ministry that was going on. When these things occurred. For John had not yet been thrown into prison. Verse 25, then there arose a dispute between some of John's disciples and the Jews about purification. And we come to an important verse in this section of text, kind of help us understand that which follows. Then there arose a dispute. This word translated dispute could have easily been translated debate or argument. So as people debate and argue about religious matters today, they did back then as well. And there's nothing wrong with doing that, as long as one does not take upon himself the character attitude that becomes ungodly in his process of debating or disputing about spiritual matters. But on this occasion, there arose a dispute between, and what occasion was this? Well, the occasion at the time that John was baptizing near Enon, near Salem. That's the occasion. So during the time that he's baptizing, this argument or debate, question arises. Then there arose a dispute between some of John's disciples and the Jews about purification. Now, you might be reading from another version that does not indicate that it is the Jews plural. You might be reading from English Standard Version, American Standard Version, New American Standard Bible that just says a Jew. A Jew. Now, here's where we have to determine, and it's hard for us to determine because we don't have the original text. But there's variations in the Greek text. Some have the Jews. It is certainly in the Greek text Jews plural. But then there are some texts that have a Jew, singular. I want to suggest to you that the King James Version got it correctly and translated it the Jews, even though the word the is not in the Greek text. A definite article is not before the word Jews. But nonetheless, the word in the Greek, according to some of the Greek interlinears, is it as the plural Jews. Now, I want to suggest to you that that's the correct rendering. Young's literal translation says some Jews, which is even a better translation. So if you're reading from one of the newer modern translations, it just says a Jew or a certain Jew. And most commentators have taken it's just an individual Jew. But I'm going to suggest to you that it is the Jews, plural, under consideration for several different reasons. One is we've seen the Jews mentioned before. We could go all the way back to chapter 1. Chapter 1 and verse 19. Now this is the testimony of John when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, "Who are you?" Now, we're going to see this that is mentioned in John 1, verse 19 through through the context there in regard to who John the Baptizer was, we're going to see that brought up in our very context that we're reading in John chapter 3. So I suggest to you that it's the Jews plural under consideration. And another reason is because in that context, in chapter 1 and in verse 19, where the Jews, plural, were mentioned, Pharisees were also mentioned in verse 24. Now those who were sent were from the Pharisees. And then when we come to chapter 4 of the Gospel of John, and in verse 1, therefore when the Lord Jesus knew that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus made and baptized more disciples than John, that statement directly goes back to this statement here in verse 25 and 26 in the third chapter of John. So the Jews and the Pharisees are under consideration again. So it is the plural that is under consideration. Plural Jews, not a single Jew. As a matter of fact, I may have overlooked one, but I could not find in all of the New Testament where a Jew was mentioned, individual, and his name was not revealed in the context in which that phrase was mentioned, a Jew. And so I want to suggest to you that it's the Jews plural under consideration here who have come, and of course their presence caused this dispute to arise. It seems from the Greek text that of course the dispute began out of John's apostles, because the word between there means out of. So it seems as though John's apostles brought this argument or dispute up with these Jews who were present. Of course, the Jews who were present and connected with the Pharisees, in the law of Moses, there were all kinds of washings. There were all kinds of ceremonial purification rites that one had to undergo to be ceremonially clean or pure. But the Pharisees, of course, had added to those the traditions of men. And Jesus and his disciples often come in conflict with the Jews, the Pharisees, over purification. And so that's another reason why I suggest that it's the Jews plural under consideration and not a single Jew. Now, I'm going to talk more about that in just a moment, but in verse 25 again, then there arose a dispute between some of John's disciples and the Jews about purification. About purification? Well, it seems as though the debate arose about purification, being ceremonially cleansed of moral defilement, but it doesn't seem in the context that John the Apostle addresses that, but he addresses something else. I think it's just simply being brought up because baptism is being mentioned, being administered. The baptism of Jesus and his disciples in verse 22, the baptism of John and his disciples in verse 23, and baptism is just a washing. It's a means of purification, a means of cleansing. There were many washings in the Old Testament. There were many baptisms in the Old Testament. One would immerse himself in order to wash himself of his moral defilement. Of course, the baptizing here is one would be immersed. But that's one of the reasons why the question of purification perhaps was brought up, because of the baptizing that was going on. Now, verse 26, and they came to John and said to him, Rabbi, he who was with you beyond the Jordan, to whom you have testified, behold, he is baptizing, and all are coming to him. And they came to John and said to him. Now here's a point that I want to bring out in regard to the Jews mentioned in the previous verse, because it matters in regard to our understanding of the text. What I want to bring out here is, note the plural pronoun, verse 26, and they came to John. Most commentators take the they there under consideration to be the disciples of John the Baptizer himself. But if the phrase the Jews is the correct rendering, according to our most English usage, we would connect the pronoun to the nearest antecedent. which would be the Jews. Do you see that? Do you see what I'm saying there? Because it's important. Is John the Baptizer's disciples asking this question? Or are the Jews asking this question? I want to suggest to you that it is the Jews who are asking this question, and not the disciples of John the Baptizer asking this question.
According to the context, that is what it is.
Okay.
Well, would the Jews be calling him rabbi if they were having a dispute with him?
And that's a good argument. People would say, well, John's disciples would call him rabbi. Remember that word rabbi as a title of honor and, so to speak, reverence. As a matter of fact, Jesus condemned the use of rabbi, but he accepted the use of rabbi in regard to himself. I believe that the Jews would in fact call John the Baptizer rabbi. Why? Because, well, because Nicodemus did. He called Jesus rabbi in chapter 3 and in verse 2. This man came to Jesus by night and said to him, "Rabbi, we know that you're a teacher come from God." So he was a Pharisee, and he was one of those who did not believe truly at that particular period of time that Jesus had in fact come from God, that he in fact had at one time dwelt in heaven but was now come from God to the earth in human form. And so I believe that John the Baptizer, who is being spoken to here, is being spoken to by the Jews in verse 25. Now, does it really matter? No, it doesn't. But when we study the text, we need to try to get to the truth of the matter. Some other reasons why I believe it's the Jews who are asking this question and not just the disciples of John the Baptizer. If it was a single Jew just mentioned in verse 25, why even mention the fact that he's a Jew? Because someone might think he's a Gentile? They're not dealing with Gentiles at this time in the ministry of Christ or John the Baptizer's ministry either. They're dealing with the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So why even mention a Jew in regard to the questioning and the dispute going on? There would have been no need to mention the fact that he was a Jew. But there would have been a need to mention the fact that they were Jews. The Jews who were antagonistic to John the Baptizer. The Jews who were antagonistic to Jesus Christ. And that's another reason why I believe that it is the Jews under consideration, the Pharisees. We're in John 3 and in verse 26. Gospel of John chapter 3 and verse 26. And they came to John and said to him, we believe the they there is the Jews mentioned in verse 25. They came to John and said to him, "Rabbi, he who was with you beyond the Jordan, to whom you have testified, behold..." There's that word, behold. We've seen that several times already in our study of John. It is a marker to grasp one's attention to the statement that is to follow. Behold, he is baptizing, and all are coming to him. Well, would John's disciples be those who would question the testimony of John, but yet those who are under consideration are not only questioning the testimony of John, but they're also questioning the testimony of Jesus Christ himself in the immediate context. Jump down in the context, verse 32. And what he has seen and heard, that he testifies, and no one receives his testimony. He who has received his testimony has certified that God is true or truthful. So there are some who have received the testimony of Jesus Christ. Some have even received the testimony of John the Baptizer, but others have not. Again, I believe that they under consideration in verse 26 are the Jews mentioned in verse 24, because they themselves had not even received the witness or the testimony of John. Because he brings that up again in the context as well in verse 28. You yourselves bear me witness that I said, I am not the Christ, but I have been sent before him. You yourselves. Now, who do you yourselves refer to? Well, if you believe it's John's disciples, then that's who's under consideration. But it's clear, it goes back in the context of chapter 1 and in verse 19 and following, where the Jews came to John the Baptizer and asked him. And he said, I am not the Christ. John 1 and in verse 20. So I am not the Christ. So you yourselves bear me witness. You yourselves know that I am not the Christ. I've said that I'm not the Christ. And so I think you yourselves refer to the Jews, plural, and not to John the Baptizer's disciples. So that's a, if you want to say the they under consideration in verse 26 is John's disciples, that's all right. But I believe the context bears it out that it is the Jews, the Pharisees that are under consideration. And they're referred to as Pharisees, chapter 4 and in verse 1. The same ones, the same group of people, not the same individuals perhaps, but the same group of people that has shown antagonism toward John the Baptizer and Jesus in times past are those who are under consideration. And they're the ones who have caused the dispute in regard to purification mentioned in verse 25. So back in verse 26, and they came to John and said to him, Rabbi, he who was with you beyond the Jordan, we mentioned this earlier, beyond the Jordan is on the eastern side of the Jordan River, where John originally was baptizing, to whom you have testified. Note that. John has testified of this one who was beyond the Jordan with him. That is, he's bore witness to him. Behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. Go back to chapter 1. So he's bore witness to Jesus. That's who's under consideration. He is baptizing, but we note from chapter 4 and in verse 1 and following that Jesus himself is not baptizing, but his disciples are baptizing. All right, verse 26 again at the end. He is baptizing and all are coming to him. Now what John is going to do here is he's not going to deal with that argument or debate regarding purification, which perhaps had some connection, we're not told, had some connection with the baptizing that was being done. But John is going to deal with this statement that is made by the Jews, evidently bringing this up to John the Baptizer as if you're not so important. Look, the one who was with you on the other side of the Jordan, he is baptizing and all are coming to him. They're not coming to you anymore. Well, they didn't understand who John was. They had never understood who John was. And so John, in the context here, is going to point out who he is and who Jesus Christ is. He's going to, you might say, tell them again. So as they had come to him in chapter 1 to question, who are you? He's having to tell them again who he is and who Jesus is. And so that's what he deals with in verse 27 to the end of the chapter, or at least to the end of verse 30. Verse 27, John answered and said, a man can receive nothing unless it has been given to him from above. A man can receive nothing. Now, who do you suppose the man is in the context that can receive nothing unless it has been given to him from heaven? Who is the man? There's only been two men in the context mentioned in verse 26. Now, in verse 26, there's two men mentioned who are baptizing. Two men. Rabbi, he who was with you beyond the Jordan, to whom you have testified, behold, he is baptizing, and all are coming to him. So who are the he and the you? Jesus and John the Baptizer. So the man under consideration, verse 27, John answered and said, a man can receive nothing. And this goes back to chapter 1 and verse 6. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. God had sent John the Baptizer into the world. He was a forerunner of Christ. He went before Christ. preparing the way for him, making a people's heart ready to receive the Messiah who was to come. So a man can receive nothing unless it has been given to him from heaven, from God. Remember, from heaven has reference to from God. We've seen that several times in this context. Go back to chapter 3 and verse 2. This man came to Jesus by night and said to him, Rabbi, we know that you're a teacher come from God. Where did Jesus come from? He came from heaven. To come from heaven is to come from God. Jesus made a play off of that in regard to being born again. If one is born from above, born from God, born from heaven, he can enter the kingdom of heaven. And so that's what's under consideration here in the Gospel of John, chapter 3. Gospel of John, chapter 3. And in verse 47, a man can receive nothing unless it has been given to him from God. All that had been given to John and all that John was authorized to do had come from God. John was simply carrying out the assigned mission and the assigned task that he had been given. That's what he was doing. And verse 28, he brings that point out to them that he had mentioned to them before. You yourselves bear me witness. That's another way of saying, I've told you before, but you did not believe me. Back in John 1, who are you? Are you the Christ? I am not. So you yourselves, that is, these unbelieving Jews, sent by the Pharisees again, you yourselves bear me witness that I said, I am not the Christ, but I have been sent before him. Go back to John 1 and verse 19 through 28. Verse 20 particularly, I am not the Christ. John 3 and in verse 29. Now, John, having reminded them of his mission, and that he's simply carrying out that which God has assigned him, and he has been sent before Jesus, that is, he has gone before him as one to prepare the way. We could go back to Malachi chapter 3 and in verse 1. And so John is carrying out the mission. He has come before Christ. He has prepared the hearts of the people of Israel to receive the Messiah who is to come. He has testified of him that he is the Christ, the Son of God. Behold, the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. And now having mentioned in verse 27 and 28 his mission, he continues in verse 29 by saying, he who has the bride is the bridegroom. But the friend of the bridegroom who stands and hears him rejoices greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. Therefore, this joy of man is fulfilled. Now what John does here is he takes something that happens, you might say it's kind of a little parable. He takes something that happens in life and he makes a spiritual application to it. Now a bridegroom during this particular period of time is much different from what we refer to as the best man. The best man in a wedding today really doesn't have anything to do with the wedding itself or the arrangements that went into the marriage. But during this particular period of time and before, the friend of the bridegroom had all kind of duties and responsibilities. He may have been, in fact, a friend of the bridegroom to the point to where he would have been one who would have even taken part in the negotiation for the marriage. Because remember, during this particular period of time, one just didn't go find a woman and say, well, I want to marry you. No, there was a negotiation process between two families that took place. So the friend of the bridegroom would sometimes even be one of those who would be an intermediary between the two families in making arrangements to bring about the marriage. Now I want you to think about this in regard to John the Baptizer. That's who he is represented in the context. John the Baptizer goes before the Messiah. Israel in the Old Testament is often referred to as the bride of God. And so Israel here, John the Baptizer is preparing the way for the bride and the Messiah to link up. John the Baptizer is the bridegroom. That's what he's doing. He's gone before the bridegroom. He is the friend of the bridegroom, or John the Baptizer is the friend of the bridegroom. Jesus is the bridegroom in the context. And he's making the marriage between Israel and the Messiah, he's making that possible. The bridegroom, the friend of the bridegroom, even had things to do, perhaps, with the arrangements of the wedding itself. Bringing the bride to the bridegroom himself. He even did that. And so John the Baptizer takes what was taking place in society that day and makes a spiritual application. He who has the bride is the bridegroom. Well, who has the bride? Note, the one who has the bride, as mentioned in verse 26, he is baptizing and all are coming to him. His bride is coming to him. The people are coming to him. That's the way it's supposed to be. John the Baptizer is friend of the bridegroom. He's taking the bride to the bridegroom. He who has the bride is the bridegroom. But the friend of the bridegroom who stands and hears him rejoices greatly. The friend of the bridegroom who stands and hears him. Now, there's a lot associated with the weddings during this particular period of time that's unfamiliar with us. And so the bridegroom, the one who stands here, the friend of the bridegroom who stands and hears him, he stands and hears the bridegroom. The bridegroom makes announcements sometime. One of those announcements that the bridegroom would make is that after the marriage was consummated, the announcement would be made that he had in fact received a virgin bride. Is that under consideration here? I do not know. But even to that extent, the bridegroom would tell the friend of the bridegroom, and the friend of the bridegroom would make that announcement to the people. And so that may be what's under consideration. But the friend of the bridegroom who stands and hears him, he rejoices greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. Therefore, this joy of man is fulfilled. John the Baptizer has great joy because he's the friend of the bridegroom. And all the people of Israel are coming to him. They're coming to the Messiah. The marriage is going to take place. And John the Baptizer is happy about it. He's happy that the nation of Israel is coming to him. He's happy because he is carrying out and completing and fulfilling the task that God had assigned him to do. To bring the bride to him. To prepare the hearts of the people to receive the Messiah. And that's what's taking place. And John the Baptizer is very happy about that. And he says in verse 30, he must increase, but I must decrease. He must increase, but I must decrease. He must increase in superiority. He must increase in importance. He must increase in honor. I must decrease in honor. I must decrease in superiority. I need to step back and let him receive the bride as is taking place. Verse 31. Now after John has dealt with himself and his mission, he makes that statement, he must, and note that word must, it's a necessity. That word must was used in verse 7 in regard to the new birth. Do not marvel that I said to you, you must be born again. It's a necessity. It must happen. And then again in verse 14 of John 3, and as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up. So here it's used again for a necessity. He must increase, I must decrease. It is something that must happen. It must take place. And so John the Baptizer kind of steps aside, so to speak, and lets Jesus come to the forefront. Verse 31, after having mentioned his role, he now begins to mention the role of Jesus Christ. He who comes from above is above all. Well, who is the one who comes from above? Note that phrase, from above. He comes from heaven. That's what that phrase means. He comes from heaven. He comes from God. To come from above is to come from God. Rabbi, we know that you're a teacher come from God. To come from above is to come from God. To come from God is to come from heaven. All of those phrases are equal. He who comes from above is above all. He has honor and superiority above all. He who comes from above is above all. He who is of the earth is earthly. So we know who the one is who comes from above. Who is the one who is of the earth and is earthly? Who is that? John the Baptist. That's who's under consideration. He who is of the earth is earthly and speaks of the earth. That is, he speaks of earthly things. He who comes from heaven, note that, come from heaven and come from above. That is, the one who comes from heaven, the one who comes from above, the one who comes from God is, again, above all. He is superior to all. And that's not only brought out here, but it's brought out in other places. He is the head of all principality. All rule, all authority has been given to him in heaven and on earth. Why? Because he is God, deity. We're out of time. Going over a little bit. I was hoping to get through all the way to verse 36, but I want you to think about this because I failed to mention it. Verse 30 seems to indicate that John the Baptizer has quit speaking. Verse 31 seems to indicate that John the Apostle begins to narrate again. Remember, we studied that earlier in the chapter in regard to the words of Jesus printed in red. Remember, we said at the end of verse 15, it seems as though Jesus quits speaking and John the Apostle begins to narrate. The language here seems to indicate in verse 30 that John the Baptizer quit speaking and John the Apostle begins to narrate because of what is said there in verse 31. He who comes from above is above all. He who is of the earth is earthly. John the Baptizer wouldn't be saying that of himself. John the Apostle seems to be narrating, showing and making a distinction between John the Baptizer and Jesus Christ. So we'll pick up there with that phrase next Lord's Day morning in verse 32 and following. Thank you very much for your kind attention this morning and your good comments.